King Josiah was a godly king, and he is recognized as one of the world's youngest kings. In 2 Kings 22:1, we read, Josiah was 8 years old when he began to reign. Josiah, as young as he was, made many necessary religious reforms, and he called for national repentance. During his reign, Josiah rebuilt the temple, and it was during this building project that an aide found a scroll, and it is believed to be the original copy of God's law written by Moses. 2 Kings 22:11 tells us, when the king read or heard the words of the book of the law, he tore his clothes. What King Josiah knows upon hearing the words of this book is he and his nation have sinned against God, and that ain't good. But that's about all he knows. Several prophets were alive and active during Josiah's reign. The prophet Huldah rises to the top during this episode of Israel's history. Huldah prophesied in the places of higher learning. 2 Kings 22:14 says that Huldah lived in the second district of Jerusalem. The original language reads like this: Huldah lived in the Mishnah, meaning the Academy of the Torah or Torah University. Rabbis believe Huldah taught the Torah to Israel's children. Huldah's expertise on the Torah is why the king sent his messengers to get this prophet and not the other living prophets, who, by the way, were not chopped liver. They were Jeremiah, Nahum, Haggai, and Zephaniah. As a resident Torah scholar, Huldah would have been the best bet on getting this thing interpreted correctly. The king doesn't ask his own religious aide what the scroll means. He doesn't even ask his priest. He doesn't ask his secretary. Instead, he sends his men to get someone who can tell him the meaning of the scroll, and they know exactly who to get, and that's Huldah. Huldah was the go-to guy. Only Huldah wasn't a guy, he was a she. 2 Kings 22:14, the prophet Huldah, who was the wife of Shallum. Go-to guy is an English idiom meaning a person who is an expert or a person who is helpful or reliable. The term go-to guy made its way into sports, politics, and business. As a sports reference, the go-to guy is the guy who scores for the team if you can get the ball to him. In politics or business, the go-to guy is the one who can get the job done or give the right answer. Galatians 6:1-2 calls us all to be go-to guys. Now, I'm using the term guys in the generic colloquial sense. These verses read, if anyone is caught in any transgression, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Keep watch on yourself, lest you too be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. Well, what is the law of Christ? Mark 12:28-31 tells us what it is. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your mind, and with all your strength. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. There is no other commandment greater than these. The law of Christ is God-focused and others-focused. The word burden in Galatians means a weight of personal and eternal significance. It can be a character flaw, a struggle, or a crisis. Bearing one another's burdens means that we come alongside them and help shoulder the weight that is threatening to pull them under. Climbing Mount Everest is a death-defying act. You can get about halfway up, and then you have to fight for every breath. Your brain doesn't get as much oxygen as it should. You get confused. You have no idea where you are anymore, and you hallucinate. Your muscles begin to deteriorate, and your heart rate zooms to dangerous levels. You make bad decisions, which may cost you your life. A killer phenomenon occurs about halfway up the mountain. It's called altitude sickness. You might know you've got altitude sickness when you get a dizzying headache. You can't sleep, you can't eat, you're nauseous, you can't maintain balance, you can't think straight. For every 6 successful summits on Everest, one person will die. You can go up with the best technology available and the best training, and you can still end up frozen to death halfway up the mountain. who has the best chance of surviving the mountain? The climber who climbs alone or the climber who has support? That's a rhetorical question. However, there is one climber who almost always makes it up and down alive. He's the Sherpa. Sherpas are the indigenous people who live in the Everest region. These are mountain guides, and they are typically men. They are elite mountaineers and experts on the dangerous mountain terrain. They are more physically capable than the most fit mountaineer. They are the go-to guys of the mountain. Sherpas carry other people's burdens to the top of the mountain. They can carry about 80 pounds of loads up and down the mountain like billy goats. Sherpas are invaluable to those who would climb the face of Mount Everest. Sherpas are genetically suited to the rigors of high altitude climbing. They have a high resistance to cold and low oxygen levels. They don't feel the effects of high altitudes like other people groups. Sherpas have been an important part of Everest climbing since the expeditions were first launched. Hardly any successful climbs have been made without a Sherpa. When Everest hopefuls come to the Himalayas, the first thing they do is hire one of these go-to guys. In life, sometimes we are the go-to guy, the Sherpa. Sometimes we're the solo climber who needs assistance to get up the mountain. Climbers need encouragement, or they might sit down and give up when the way becomes dangerous. Sherpas have prepared themselves spiritually and are in a stronger place mentally and emotionally, so they are more able to face the danger head on, and they can climb higher and higher, carrying the burdens of others and guide them to the top. There are several instances in Scripture where someone helped carry another's burden. One from the life of Moses is really one of the best examples we have. Exodus 17, 8 through 13. The Amalekites came and attacked the Israelites at Rephidim. Moses said to Joshua, "Choose some of our men and go out and fight the Amalekites. Tomorrow I will stand on top of the hill with the staff of God in my hands." So Joshua fought the Amalekites as Moses had ordered, and Moses, Aaron, and Hur went to the top of the hill. As long as Moses held up his hands, the Israelites were winning. But whenever he lowered his hands, the Amalekites were winning. When Moses' hands grew tired, they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it. Aaron and Hur held his hands up, one on one side, one on the other, so that his hands remained steady till sunset. So Joshua overcame the Amalekite army with the sword. Within this story are important lessons for us to learn how to bear one another's burdens. But before I get to that, I kind of want to set the scene. The attack by the Amalekites against Israel was unprovoked and it was evil. In response, Moses called his general, named Joshua, to lead the armies of Israel to defend the nation against the attack. Now, the Amalekites were nomads, and they ranged over a wide army. They firmly believed in squatters' rights, so if they ended up there and pitched a tent, they said it was theirs. They were actually related to the Israelites through Esau. But related or not, they turned out to be one of Israel's most nasty enemies. They were, in fact, the first people group to wage war against the Israelites. The method of attack used by the Amalekites was despicable. The attack was so ugly that Exodus 17, 16 says that God was so mad, he was going to fight them himself. What they did that was so bad was come up at the rear of the camp where the women and children were stationed. In the Israelite army, the way these guys moved through the wilderness is the men went first with the weapons, and the children were supposed to be protected by the men coming up in the back, and after the women were the children. So it was men, women, and children. Strongest first, weakest last. The Amalekites knew this, and they came up through the back, and they killed all the children, and they raped all the women, and this, just for fun, they killed them too. And then they took the luggage. This act of cowardice could not go unanswered. As the army fights on, Moses and Aaron, who is Moses' brother, and Hur, who is Moses' brother-in-law, went up to the top of the hill. They did this so they could be seen. They wanted their army to know that their leaders were there and that they were praying. When Moses held his arms up in prayer, Israel started winning the war. When Moses' arms gave out and sank to his sides, Israel started losing. Life or death for Israel depended on the arms of one man being lifted up in prayer. In part, this amazing passage shows us the power of prayer. Life and death in the course of history depends on prayer. We can conclude that many times the people of God are defeated today because we are not praying. Even though Moses was praying, Joshua still had to fight. Praying did not eliminate Joshua's job. The battle was won with prayer, but also through the work of the army led by General Joshua. Each man had his own burden, and each man needed help carrying it. The job of supporting the battle in prayer was exhausting, and Moses had trouble continuing. We might think that fighting was the hard work and praying was the easy work, but prayer was just as hard. Praying for each other is helping to carry their burdens. We read in this passage that Aaron and Hur came and supported Moses' hands so he could continue the hard work of prayer. They were helping him as he prayed. Their help was successful. They helped keep Moses' hands steady until the sun went down. Though this was Moses' work to do, it was more than he could do by himself. He needed others to come along and help bear the burden. From the life of Huldah and this story in Moses' life, I came up with some practical ways that we can help bear one another's burdens in our lives. The first one being, recognize people who are burdened or weighted down with burdens. Aaron and Hur recognized that Moses was struggling. In order to do something to help someone, we have to see it first. So often we are oblivious to the problems that others are facing. What Aaron and Hur saw was Moses was flailing, and when they saw it, they did something about it. What they did was come alongside Moses. Seeing the problem is good, but it can't just stop there. Aaron and Hur didn't just go, "Oh, poor Moses, he's getting tired. Let's go rifle through the clearance items at Walmart." No, they brought him a big rock to sit on. Then they positioned themselves next to him and held his arms up for him. In effect, they were saying, "We got you, Mo." The second point is, hang in there. The last part of what happened that day is such an important part of what it means to bear another's burden. Aaron and Hur stayed until the job was done. If they had gotten bored and walked off before the battle was over, the Israelites would have lost, and Moses would have been chalked off as a failure. To truly bear a burden, we need to be willing to walk with and stand by a person until the crisis has ended. The third point, like Huldah, only share your wisdom and advice when asked. As a Torah scholar, Huldah knows good and well what King Josiah should and should not be doing. She knows exactly where the nation of Israel has gone wrong, yet she does not make a peep until she's asked. This particular point might not be for the rest of you, but some of us, not to mention any names, and her initials are Jackie McNeil, have a hard time not offering unsolicited advice. I always have something to say. I have an opinion about everything from dental floss to career choices. The fourth point is be available. Huldah comes the minute she's asked for. Let's be honest for just one second. Bearing burdens will interrupt our schedules. We are not told what Huldah was doing, but she was probably teaching a class, she was probably studying, doing something, and when the messengers came for her, she was interrupted. Bearing people's burdens is going to interrupt us. Sometimes a crisis can be dealt with quickly, and sometimes it takes longer. The key is to be available. Be there. And the fifth one, be a listener. James 1:19 says, "Let every person be slow to speak and quick to hear." I'm sure you've all heard that God gave us two ears and one mouth, so we should listen twice as much as we talk. This might be the most important point. Sometimes we miss opportunities to help others because we're not listening. We're busy thinking about the next thing we are going to say. Active listening takes work. Listening can be a challenge, but you'll be surprised at how much you will learn if you'll just listen. To bear one another's burdens means to help each other. If you see someone leaning over, prop them up. If you see them trip, catch them. If they're drowning, throw them a lifeline. And point of fact is, you'll never know when you're going to be the next one who needs help. When we all work in this biblical, symbiotic way, we can all weather the hardships of life together. On July 25th, 2002, 9 coal miners entered Q Creek Mine in Somerset County, Pennsylvania. At around 9 o'clock at night, the miners were drilling near the abandoned Saxman Mine, and then 50 gallons of water rushed into the mine, and it cut the miners off from the surface. In a desperate race against time, more than 200 rescuers worked to save the trapped miners. The men were trapped about 1.5 miles away from the mine entrance. They were all rescued as a group some 77 hours after being trapped in the mine. But in the meantime, during those 77 hours, there was 55-degree water all around them, and it threatened to kill them all of hypothermia. What they did is, when one man got cold, the other 8 huddled around him and warmed him up. And then when he was warm, they huddled around another guy. And when he was warm, they huddled around yet another one. And they did this for 77 hours. When one guy was down, the other guys carried the burden. Bearing burdens is never easy, but it is necessary. Bishop and Donna Martin's East Texas Church decided that God was calling them to be go-to guys. So between two church members, they adopted 77 children out of the foster care system. The story is really quite amazing. I was watching it this morning, probably about 3 o'clock this morning. I was watching this really amazing story. This bishop and his wife, he wears like the bishop garb with the black shirt and the collar, but he wears bib overalls on top of the whole mess. And one day he'd gone to work, and his wife, they had just lost a child, and she had grieved so much, and she felt the Holy Spirit tell her, adopt some children. She said, okay. And she went in the house. Keep in mind, her husband is at work. She goes in the house and calls 1-800-ADOPT-A-CHILD and says, hello, I'm Donna Martin. I want to adopt some kids. When her husband gets home, oh, welcome home, honey. Guess what I did today? What they did, though, is they realized there were so many kids out there that needed homes. They got their church members all together, about 23 families, and between all those 23 families, they adopted 77 kids. These kids were not babies. These kids had been bounced around the foster care system for years. They had a lot of trouble. These kids had a lot of burdens. But this East Texas church were the go-to guys for these kids, and they helped lift the burdens of these kids. Many of these kids are in college today and having careers. They bore these children's burdens, even though it was not easy. This East Texas church embodies the law of Christ, and I admire them. I'm positive there are plenty of people right now who need a go-to guy. Be that person. And when you're down, don't be afraid to say that you need a Sherpa. You need a go-to guy. I believe this is how our church will function the very best in the days to come.